Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you serious?
Hello, welcome to How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Bronzy. Before we crack on with today's show, we've got a great guest in that I can't wait to introduce you to. I just want to say congratulations to our competition winner, Alexander Walker, who has won himself a Steelbook special edition copy of Just Cause. The latest edition of the Just Cause franchise has come out, and yeah, that's going to make its way to you. If you want to get involved in more competitions and such, all you have to do is head to howtokillanhour.com/news, and you can join our mailing list and we'll let you know when we're giving away more cool stuff. Now, today's show, I'm very happy, and I'd like a round of applause from myself and you, Billy, for Mr. John Bentley in the building today. How you doing?
Oh, gosh. Most flattered. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming down and joining us on the show. Obviously, you're very well known for the Gadget Show. How's things going with that at the moment? Are you in between shooting? Are you shooting or not at the moment?
Well, we just started last week shooting for the series that's coming back in April, which is either Series 31 or Series 29, depending on whether you count the World Tour or not, so which is an awful lot of programmes, actually, one way or another.
I don't think there's any show out there that I know that's been running for 30 plus seasons isn't like a soap.
Ah, well, Top Gear, for it, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go.
They would.
Funny you should say that, though, because you do come from a car background, don't you? You are a petrol head, a car fanatic?
I mean, fortunately, I've only worked with my childhood interests, basically. Yeah. Cars and technology, and probably a few other things as well, but I've certainly got around to working with those. And I used to do the car programme, Top Gear, many years ago, in the dim mists of history.
Yeah, yes. Is it true you worked at Ford?
At Ford. My first job after college was at Ford. And it was actually pretty dull, though, unfortunately, and I expected it to be all involving lots of cars. On a day-to-day basis, it wasn't really. I just came up with a lot of figures and worked in finance and product planning, I think it was, and we sort of counted the number of windscreen wipers required for various various cars in various places and things. It was good, but you never really saw a car. So that's why I applied for the job on Top Gear and got it being a researcher.
Right, so you started off as a researcher on Top Gear. Yep. And what was it like that? Because this was the Top Gear of old, not the Top Gear that we currently have. This was a very early version of Top Gear. Was it like?
It was good fun because it was with cars right from the start. It was just so much more fun working in the media than for Fords. I did criticise it quite a bit when I went for interview, and I wanted it to be like the then car magazine on telly, in the sense that it'd be more critical, more humorous than just the very straight show it was perhaps when I joined it. And over the years, I gradually got in a position to make it more like that. But it was always, from my point of view, I didn't manage to make the break then to make it into being an entertainment show, which is what Jeremy Andy did magnificently in the early 2000s.
Yeah, because I reckon when people say Top Gear to me, I think of it less of a car show, but an entertainment show that just cars are the, excuse the pun, vehicle for moving things forward, right? So as that happened, and even like you said, that kind of happened after you on the show, were you quite happy to see that happen?
I was brilliant. I think it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Because we'd often talked about doing it in the studio, but they actually got round to doing it and getting it all together. But it was almost, because I think it was almost on the point of going away, I think, and the controller of the beast says, well, he wanted to reinvent it, brought Jeremy back, who'd left it, and they reinvented it brilliantly.
Great stuff. Mm. And are you still into cars quite a bit then?
Yes, I am. I mean, last year I was writing a book about them for the future of the car, which was a foolish thing to say yes to doing, because the timescale of books and the timescale of the future don't necessarily fit together terribly well. But nevertheless, it enabled me to find out quite a bit about where they might be going. Yes.
So Future of the Car Part 1 is probably what you're writing, because I think it's going to be an ongoing series, isn't it, really?
Yeah, what is it? I mean, the good thing is that they are changing in a way more rapidly than they had been doing in the 90s and the early 2000s, where basically they just got heavier and safer and more got more kit in them, but they hadn't really changed very much. But now there's, I think a lot of the changes are overstated, in the sense that we won't be entirely electric powered and entirely autonomous by whatever year somebody's plucking off the shelf today. But there are nevertheless massive changes around in cars and transport, which is great fun.
Yeah, I mean, we're very interested in how technology in cars is just going to help the everyday use for us, because I know there's like loads of really cool features and stuff, but we're kind of thinking, how is the electric vehicle going to integrate into everyday life? And I think the next key change is going to be the actual everyday car that gets presented to us, where we're like, oh, I can actually just take this and maybe drive it around all week and charge it up at the end of the week. How close are we to kind of that real easy and affordable consumer car, do you reckon?
I don't know whether electricity really is going to be the answer, or whether there might just be an electric phase and then a hydrogen phase after that, or something else. Probably won't be compressed air or nuclear or anything like that, but it certainly, I think longer term hydrogen, because there are a number of problems with batteries in cars. They're very heavy at the moment, unless there's another revolution just around the corner, which there isn't yet, it doesn't appear. And they makes electric cars really suitable for short journeys around town, for example. But once you start, still there's that issue of the long journey. Could I drive from Birmingham to London and back again in anything much, in a very expensive Tesla? Yes. Anything else? Probably not.
Yeah.
And then you're dependent. Is there going to be a charging point where you get to? Is it going to be free? And then there's the matter of charging point etiquette. So you leave it charging, it's already charged, people are going to come and get really cross with you and pull your windscreen wipers off. if you've left it there charging for hours, you're taking the space and things like that.
Exactly. I mean, I get annoyed when my phone's charging and somebody unplugs it and starts charging their phone. I'm like, hang on, I'm only at 80%. I'm not 100% yet. So there's all sorts of like drama that can be caused around sort of... I can imagine two people fighting over a charger for their car.
But I think for lots of driving, I think electric cars work really well. And also we'll get into that. The whole point is that electricity is everywhere. And actually, it is already everywhere now. So it's not a question of building another infrastructure of any sort. It's just a question of making it available so that wherever you stop, wherever you park, you get used to plugging it in. And that means whenever you come back to your car, it's going to be charged. That's the sort of idea where it will almost work for maybe 60 or 70% of the of drivers.
So you reckon when we get to the point where it's kind of like, I reckon when you came into the building, if you needed a USB, if you need to plug a USB lead in for anything, you kind of know you're going to find one. And is it that kind of feeling that you reckon we need to get to, that kind of balance of number of access to chargers?
Yes, I think so. And where it means even if you park at the zoo, or if you go visit the zoo, you go to the cinema, you expect there to be a charge there. So you'll automatically be charging your car up, and they'll probably throw in the power because they want you to go to your that cinema or that attraction.
You know, that'd actually be a good sell, you know, free charge while you watch the film. I'll tell you that. Yeah, that'd be wicked. So what else have you kind of been learning while you've been writing this book? Because this is a really interesting area.
It's a good topic. One thing I'm reassured by is that old cars, I think, have a great future.
Good.
Because I think almost... If everybody isn't using petrol anymore, if everybody isn't, it's almost like film, like the parallel with film photography, because back in the 80s and 90s, people used to talk about, it's terrible, we're going to run out of silver, and you're not going to be able to take photographs anymore. And then along came digital photography, all of a sudden that became an enthusiastic minority niche, and you don't have to worry about that anymore. There's plenty of silver to go around. And I think it'll be the same with old cars. You won't have to worry so much about causing pollution with them, say, or you won't have to worry about whether there's enough petrol to drive them, or simply because you'll be in a small enthusiastic minority.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I've got a friend that told me that he's got a film camera and he whipped it out and it was like talk of the room when he took it out. People were like, what's that? He's like, well, you know, it's a, you know, Pentax, da, 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 da. And everyone was like, oh yeah, check that out. Mm. It's interesting. So I could imagine somebody pulling up with a smoky, you know, car with like banging smoke coming out the rear of it and everyone going, oh, look at that. Isn't that nice? Instead of now everyone kind of shunning a petrol car. Is there a classic car that you'd like to drive once in a while, or you something?
Oh, I think the answer is a whole, you need a whole fleet of cars. Really, you need a car. You need a car for every occasion. I mean, you need sort of Rolls Royce to take on picnics. You need. Oh, yeah. I mean, whenever I look at old pictures of, I want to drive everything that's on it. In an ideal world, you would have a huge hangar just full of all cars maintained in perfect condition. So if you fancied driving an Aston DB4, you could take that. If you fancied a Ferrari, but also if you wanted to sort of experience, I don't know, a 1971 Ford Cortina, you could do that as well. The reality might, you might not like it. I don't
know. That's because a lot of maintenance. I need to save a lot to have that hangar. No, and also I've got a guy to keep it nice and spit shined and polished.
What do you drive yourself?
For me at the moment, I drive a range of cars actually, because I'm quite lucky because technology is moving into cars. It's quite interesting here at How to Kill an Hour. That world is colliding with us. So
yes.
Recently, I've actually been a Toyota GT86, actually, which isn't a very techie car.
It's a very tactile car.
I feel like it's very... welcome to How to Kill an Hour, the car show, by the way. I feel like it's a motor vehicle. Like, when I got in it, I didn't feel like I was in a spaceship. You know, certain cars you get in, it's got, you know, touchscreen here, it's got lights over here, you know, you can adjust the seats and stuff. I reckon you get in it, and when you put your foot down and you just hear the grumble of the engine, I just feel like, yeah, I'm here to go for a nice drive in this. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Well, that's lovely sound. We're in the blue edition as well, which had a nice sports pack on it. Great drive.
Why don't they put CarPlay in there and Android Auto, which is one of Toyota seem to be resisting that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of got this halfway CarPlay. So you plug your phone in.
It's got its own thing.
You plug your phone in and you get a bit of display, but CarPlay needs to go in every car, I reckon, because it's a great concept and it just works.
Do you think it's because they want to own your data? Do you think it's because Toyota want to know where you've been so they can sell something to you? Or maybe they're just worried about something else. I don't know.
It may be that, or it may be the cost of having CarPlay in a vehicle. We don't know the
licensing cost.
Exactly. We don't know the deal that Apple are brokering, but we do know that they have some of the most popular handsets in the world. And if you put CarPlay in your car, you're not going to put off customers. Do you know what I mean? So maybe the deal with licensing, Apple are saying, hey, you've got to give us a good piece of the car that you're selling for that. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
They could give you the option of paying for it as the customer though, couldn't they?
Yeah.
I think there's, because in some ways, Toyota's look very advanced. I mean, they're plugging the hydrogen thing. Yeah. I think there's still a long way to go, probably GT86 accepted, probably of actually getting more feel and more excitement into the cars. I mean, the traditional criticism for them from the Corolla onwards, isn't it? Although they're bringing back the Corolla name apparently later this year.
Oh yeah, they love retro, so that's coming back. That's going to hit hard, I reckon. Yeah, definitely. Other than that, we've been in a few other vehicles. I'm not quite allowed to talk to you about them. A couple of concept cars, but here we're going to be kind of investigating how. I just want to know about the real feasibility of having electric cars or hydrogen based cars that only expel water, right?
It dribbles out. I went to drive in a Toyota Mirai, and it dribbles water at the end of the journey.
Really?
Yes, I've got the video of it here. I'll never find it.
when you finish driving, it just goes for a wee?
Yes.
How interesting. You also mentioned photography as well. I feel like in the Gadget Show, everybody kind of has their thing that they do. I feel like Georgie, she kind of gets thrown out there to to Facebook and those trips. Otis kind of gets the life scared out of him in whatever way possible. He's always got to break a world record. I feel like for you, photography is one of the things.
One of the things
really
I'm interested
in.
I'm interested. Yes, I used to do a bit of that as a child as well. Obviously, many years ago. And I sort of become a bit of a born again. Actually, I became a bit of a born again photographer when I started writing car articles for newspapers. And the first thing they asked was what have you got any pictures to go with it? So I had to go down. That was early 2000s. It was just the sort of cusp of film to digital. So if you were doing an article for the Evening Standard, they would want it on digital. If you wanted to do one for a magazine like Top Gear magazine, they wanted a transparency.
Okay.
So I had to go and buy a scanner, which I've still got, although it's actually amazing, it's still working. It's very so you take the film, get it processed, and then scan it in and email it off for the paper. That was when that was changing.
Yeah,
2002.
That sounds foreign. I don't think people would even, you know, like young journalists would even be aware.
You'd have to go through that. And then before that, I suppose all those people loading films in bags and processing them in bags at football matches and things.
Crazy. What's your go-to at the moment? Do you have a film camera still and a digital camera?
What do I have currently? I've still got a Sony A6000. Is a small compact thing I carry around quite a lot. Currently, I've still got some old film Nikon cameras, got Nikon digital cameras as well. I was quite taken by their new Z7. That was the mirrorless. Mirrorless is very useful, I think. We can get seduced by the idea of an optical image in a viewfinder, but electronic viewfinders are so good, especially when it gets darker, especially when you want to review the pictures in your viewfinder. And as you get older, as I find, you need to put on your reading glasses to see the screen at the back. So that's really useful.
Mm. I mean, one of the things I like about mirrorless cameras is just the fact that the form factor is smaller, because they just can make the body a little bit smaller.
It's a little bit. It's only a little bit, because the lenses still need to be as big.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Micro Four Thirds is very useful, isn't it? And I did have this notion that sensors really would get smaller, so that people go out and do motorsport and take pictures. No, motorsport's a problem, because then you get the fence in the way and then you get too much depth of field, so that increases with a Micro Four Thirds, so that's less useful. But certainly in terms of, because the weight of the lens goes down with the smaller sensor size.
Indeed. I mean, look, John really knows his stuff.
I don't know.
Firing off all sorts there, but with regards to photography, do you think that digitization of photography and the fact that it's so much more accessible is a good thing, that people can just kind of, anyone can kind of pick up a camera now? You don't kind of have to have £2,000 to get, you know, an enormous lens and a great camera body.
Yes, to a degree, although I'm actually not quite so sure it's been that democratization that one might imagine, because actually people still want a lot of expensive stuff, don't they, to do things, to do it properly. And to some extent, with lights and cameras and lenses and things, people are demanding more. I think they're demanding actually higher resolution, higher sensors, and bigger lenses. I think the gap between what you might use as just a casually interested punter and what the professional photographer is doing has actually got bigger.
Because if
you bought a copy of Car magazine in the 70s, it would all be shot on 35mm SLRs with film that you could actually probably go and buy. And I did buy one with saving from my holiday job. But I got more or less the same bit of kit that they were taking the pictures of the Ferraris on Car magazine. Whereas now, I think there's more differentiating. You want people, because there are more people doing it, I suspect. You need. So, or is it just because standards have risen in a healthy way and things become more specialised?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, look, you're surrounded by lots of things. You've got these microphones and stands and everything. Whereas,
just got it all. eBay's a great thing, you know, got it all for a knockoff price. you know what? That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, as people want to kind of specialise in stuff, I suppose there is. People do want to go for that premium quality. I mean, with some things, I'm kind of like, buy it once so you never have to buy it again. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that with these microphones. Do you know what I mean?
Caressing them tenderly.
You know, caressing yes. the Shure microphone. And then there's other things where I'm just like, just get it as cheap as possible, mate. Let's crack on. But with photography, I think there is a notable difference if you just try. And like, you, a very good point, if you do just get super cheap lenses, there are a couple of bargains out there when it comes to lenses, I reckon. Mm-hmm. But I reckon when you can tell the difference when someone's spent some money on their glass and they've got a really good lens. Like, we've got a friend of the show called Canon John. His name's John, and he loves Canon cameras, obviously, and he gets to use some serious, you know, like the lenses, like sports lenses, like the big telephoto lenses. He gets those ones that are the size of your arm.
It's John Devo, is it?
Yes, yeah, John Devo. Your mate's a John.
Yes.
So I'm sure you've seen his photography on the.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's really, really good. So some of the lenses that he gets his hands on, just like, they're enormous. But they're super specialised, I guess, though, right? What are your thoughts on camera phone photography?
It's great, isn't it? And it's good that we're now getting three lenses rather than two on the backs of cameras. It only seems to get better. And also, I think one of the most interesting things is they're almost doing some things now better, camera phones, than real cameras, because they're harnessing the computational processing power of the phone in amazing ways. So you can actually get pictures. I think it almost will get to the stage that these very serious photographers may have to have their Canon 5DSR, whatever it is, and also have a camera phone for certain shots that you can only get the shots on the phone, because you can only get, say, that depth of field in that light with something that takes 30 pictures and combines all the things together before spewing out its final image.
100%. I mean, I love some of the in-camera stuff that happens, like on the software. Like the fact you can just point, you know, a camera image that's got a really bright sun in it and then a bit of shade over there and a couple of phases, and it kind of pulls it all together and makes it look great. That's phenomenal. That saves you hours in Photoshop. I've popped stuff up, put a filter on it, and people have DM'd me going, oh, what camera did you use there? I'm like, Pixel 2.
The Pixel's large, arguably, certainly was last time I tried them out, or certainly ahead of that particular computational game, I think.
Yeah, I think when it comes to camera phones, the Pixel and the P20.
The P20 is also.
Yeah, Otis, if you say P20 to him, he'll go on for like 30 minutes. But rightly so, it's a very, very good camera. What are your kind of thoughts on the future of smartphone cameras then? Because you made an interesting point. Lenses kind of are the thing that DSLRs have. That kind of, that's what they have that gives them focus, optical zoom and stuff like that. But an iPhone doesn't have a lens on it, so that kind of can hold it back, or a smartphone. Do you think maybe in the future we could see some sort of hybrid, you know, lenses for phones and stuff?
Well, there have been, haven't there? Yeah. There have been Samsung and a few other things. I'm trying to remember the various ones over the years have tried to be a bit more and be a bit more towards the camera end of it. But on the other hand, I don't think it's ever quite worked, as because it's extra bulk and nobody really. And also, those adapters I've always been rather disappointed by for iPhones and things. They've never really delivered on the promise, I found.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it'll be needing something that's all within its little box. Right. So I'm conscious of your squeaking chair here.
Oh, that's all right. Squeak away. That's fine. As long as I don't think you're breaking wind, which I do sometimes on a show. But it's all right. I'm not having any beans last night, so we're all good. So the gadget show.
Yeah.
Like you said, series 29 or 31, depending on how you count it. What's been fun for you on the previous season, the current season that's out on the gadget show? What have you enjoyed? Because you've done so much. You've done so much. I mean, I did enjoy watching you try and camping. That was quite the camping.
Oh right,
episode. Yes, that was quite good. I think it's last season, season before that. Yeah,
that was quite cold. Yes, that was a year. I'm trying to think. Recently, I did. I mean, it was all very enjoyable. Some of the highlights over the years, there were a few. I mean, I did a 24-hour race at Silverstone. I can remember that.
I thought
that was going to be terrible. Because, I'm not a very gamey sort of person in life generally, which is, I don't say that. I mean, it's probably something I ought to develop, but it's going to take me a long time to get around to it. But I was really not looking forward to driving on a simulator for 24 hours, albeit only in stage. But actually, just totally got into it.
Yeah.
And really, really wanted to. It was almost 24 hours disappeared.
That's great. I mean, can you talk us and the listener through this from scratch, kind of how this idea came around? Because I think this was was a really interesting watch, that.
Well, it was good. Theoretically, racing against real cars on a Silverstone 24-hour race. And the idea was that one would do it on a simulator and see who was quicker. I can't remember actually. I actually remember. I was just not looking forward to it. But I'd done a little bit. I think it was called R Factor. I think the game was. I don't know whether it's still around or not. I don't know. It's probably been supplemented. It was quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
So just very enjoyable. And it was one of these chairs that moved a bit, and you had obviously the three monitors and quite a bit of tactile feel through the steering as well, which is surprising.
Did you knock back a few coffees that night then?
No, none at all.
Not a notable amount of.
No.
Well, you're quite full of beans anyway, so I don't reckon you need too much coffee if you're trying to do an overnighter. So what can you tell us about the forthcoming season of the Gadget Show? What can you let us know about or give us a little inkling?
Oh, I'm doing a podcast. For the second time on the program. The first time was in 2006 with a laptop and a microphone. I need to be taking notes of all your equipment. But I think inevitably it'll probably just be one episode. It won't be only.
Oh no!
But I do get to drive an Alfa SZ. Which is nice because I had not, and because the owners club asked me that I wanted to drive one. I said yes, but why don't we record it and use it for our podcast, which is very nice because I had a t-shirt with one on and I've not driven one.
Huh.
I have driven Alphas obviously in the past, but not an SZ.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, what are you going to record the podcast in the SZ?
I'd hope so. Yes.
I've got to say, interiors of cars, quite a good space for recording. Actually, you know,
they are
dead sound.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you get a little roar of the engine in the background as well.
Good. Yes.
As long as you're not trying to hold microphones at the same time.
I imagine we can stick them on something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's always something to do. So let me get this right. There's going to be a Gadget Show podcast and one episode, you think, in a car.
Yes, I know that. Does that? yes. And I did I did think about it. I can't remember what the other... I mean, Craig is supposed to be learning a language, but I mean, we've been there before with learning languages and with apps and things and not usually terribly successfully.
And Craig, the very scouse Craig, learning another language. Oh, that's going to be great, hearing a Liverpudlian accent trying to learn like another language. But do you know what language he's going to be trying to learn? No, please say it's Chinese. Or that'd be great. Mandarin, please tell me. That'd be amazing. Konnichiwa. Great. Yes. anything else you can tell us? I'd like to squeeze what I can.
I ought to know. But I don't think, honestly, they've decided many things yet, which is slightly unnerving. I've done tests of AirPods and tests about their rivals, which none of which I found to be quite as good at, I don't think. But
what's your take on headphones? That's quite interesting.
Headphones, yeah. I prefer the classics.
Over the years,
because they're so such good value, aren't they? All these wonderful the Sennheiser HD25s, the Grado SR60s, the Beyer Dynamic DT150. Ooh. Those big things are perfect for studios. They're lovely.
Talking dirty to me. This is my kind of talk. Thank you. Cheers, John. Billy's wearing a pair of HD25s at the moment.
Excellent. But these old classics, they're still wonderful. They're not very expensive, and they last for ages. Obviously, they're not wireless. So in some cases, I've got a Bowers & Wilkins wireless. This quite large ones and a very old AKG one, which isn't very good. But I like headphones.
Really? So yes. you've got a little collection then from the sounds.
Not much more than that, though, unfortunately.
Okay, fair enough.
Actually, in terms of light and cheap and quite old, PX100s are always very good. Of the original sort, the Mark 1.
They're pretty good. Let's geek out on headphones. Feel free to press the 15 seconds on the podcast.
what are your favourites on there? You've probably got something much more high-tech and expensive.
Do you know what? The Sennheiser HD25s, I love, because they're modular headphones, which means... I've bought another pair of them. I'll explain why in a moment. But once you buy a pair, technically, you never really have to buy another pair.
Like the handle and the spade.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. So I've had leads go on them. I've had capsules break on them. And then you can just fix those. And I DJ'd quite a lot. So there's a lot of wear and tear on headphones.
You had the coily lead.
You get the coily lead. That's it. You get the straight lead. You can get different coloured pads as well. I had the suede ones as well. So, you know, it's quite nice on the ears. So you could pretty much change any part of the headphone for fun or when it breaks, because headphones really, like that wear and tear of putting it on your shoulders, leaning on it, you know, wiggy, all that stuff. That kind of breaks the headphones, right? So I love them. And I had to get a new pair because someone nicked them. And that just proves they're really good headphones. I think I left them in a DJ booth for a couple of hours, came back, they were gone. But that's what the DJ game's like.
Have you been tempted at all by the HD26?
Should we go? Should we do it?
I haven't really. I've only tried them briefly. I've never.
Great frequency response. But I think for me, I'm like, if it ain't broke.
They don't look quite as tough.
I think it's the hardware of the headphone as well. Oh, and the great frequency response as well. You get really good bottom end for a really small capsule, which is hard for a small capsule to create bass, as you know. Or if you do not know, now you do know. That's my go-to headphone, and my everyday walking around headphone is probably Apple. The regular wired earpods, because we mix down the show for people that listen to podcasts. So we mix down the show wearing those because most of the time, because obviously that's what people are listening to them in. So do you know what I mean? Kind of makes sense. It's got to sound good in those headphones over everything else. Yep. And for the gym, I use Powerbeats 3s.
Ah, right.
They stay in your ears. And again, like the tiny little headphones, but the way that they're held into your ear, get a really good bass response off them as well. You know, that's the hardest thing to replicate, I think, when it comes to headphones. Yes. How about you? I mean, what's your walking around headphone then?
I do use the Apple ordinary standard AirPods with the phone. Mm-hmm. But one thing really still irritates, because when I go for my walks, I can't get data. So I can't get live radio on my iPhone, which is always...
Podcasting's where it's at, John.
There's a lot of that, but so I have to carry around in the car. I have to carry around a small portable radio with some Sony earphones. And you do often find sometimes I haven't actually got the required now adapters for... I've always found, I haven't got something I haven't got.
Yeah, you need the little... I call it the umbilical cord for the iPhone, sort of the adapter that changes the lightning to the... 3/4 inch.
Yes,
not 3/4 inch. 3.
Which irritatingly has its own DAC in it. Isn't that irritating? There's one in the phone, but they isolate the one in the phone, and I've chosen to put presumably a very similar quality one, I think. In the, I don't know whether it's, but at the moment the iPhone is still sufficiently convenient to package that would still go. You still continue with it in spite of all those irritations.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, the earpods, I think they're all right. I mean, for the size, the battery power that you get for them, they're all right. The AirPods are very good. So yeah, you may have fast forwarded a few 15 seconds there to get for us geeking out over sound there. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, we were talking about future things coming up on the gadget. I'm squeezing you, John.
I know, and I'm just wondering,
what are you allowed to tell us? That's the real thing.
No, that the problem is, I don't think they've decided yet.
Yeah? Okay.
Yes, the few meetings.
Well, that's quite interesting, actually, because we spoke about this before you press record, and the format of the show has changed, hasn't it? And it feels like it, as a viewer, you're recording a lot of content closer to the actual transmission date than before. You'll still do key events like E3 and conferences and other key bits of stuff that you record at another time. But I feel like it feels liver, closer to the time of gadgets coming out when you review stuff on the show.
I think so. And I mean, I know it'd be things like OLED TVs and things and stuff. I would have tested those. But I don't know whether that incorporates those micro OLEDs, which I'm not quite sure what the difference is, actually. Do you know?
I don't think we'll go into it. There'll be another fast forward in the 15 seconds. Yeah, we might spend an episode talking about it in the future. How much do you know about what the other guys are doing in the show? Are you generally surprised when they're like, oh, and you know, Otis has been off here and Georgie's been off there? Do you kind of have an idea of what you guys are getting up to?
An idea, but maybe not as much as one should. But it's certainly by the time we get to the studio, I've got an idea. No, we haven't actually watched it all before, so we can discuss it. That is good, yes.
By the time they press record, definitely know what's going on by the time the script's rolling. I just realised we missed something on Top Gear, actually. Is it true you got a corner named after you on the track?
Yes. Yes, I do have a corner on the track, yes.
How does that feel?
I feel deeply honoured.
It's a great privilege.
Yes.
That's a great, great privilege, yeah.
Yes, I think it was a... Yes. Well, I think it... Well, it's nice.
It's quite interesting. I wonder what the Top Gear is going to be like in 20 years' time when everything's electrical, when there's electrical vehicles.
But one thing Tesla's proved, that electric cars can be huge fun. I mean, so there's no problem with that. Whether they're huge fun, they're not necessarily very good at sustained lap performances, which they tend to overheat, because I mean, I think what the great Tesla trick was to realise that you could stress all the components out two or three or four times what they should be, because you tend to only go 0 to 60 and then... Don't
chill.
You don't go 0-60 and then 0-60.
So you kind of found a little burnout point there at the car.
But you do on the track.
Yeah,
so
of course.
You can only get onto the second lap, more or less.
Did you get to go around the track a few times then?
The current Top Gear track, no. But I used to go. I've gone around old tracks in the past. I would quite enjoy going around racing. I'm not very. I don't have a competition license, but I do. One thing that tried various cars have surprised me on track. So these most surprised me. Actually, Aston Martin DB6. You think it's going to be like a lorry, but it wasn't. Where was that? It wasn't Cadwell Park. It was all. Donington, yeah. Anyway,
okay,
yeah.
All right. So, what do you get up to when you're outside of the gadget show and you're just being John, who's not having to look at all things new in the world of tech? Are you still quite into stuff, or do you like to have a little break, a little detox?
No.
Walking.
Oh, well, only just wandering around. There's not going down. up and down, short walks in the countryside.
Go to the shop, get some.
No. I still like going around with maps and doing, and all that sort of stuff. Other things, I'm not sure. I don't have many interests. I haven't actually got round to doing anything with. I'm terrible at reading things like the FT and the Economist and things. I think probably making sense of the world is my hobby, to try and do so.
I think we all can relate to that at the moment. I think that's the general consensus across the UK, is we're all trying to figure out what the fuck's going on here, John.
But when artificial intelligence is good enough to deal with economics, it'll be brilliant.
Yeah, we can just chill out until Skynet takes over and runs things for us. What's coming up then for John, and what can we look out for then?
What's coming up for me? I've still got to get this book finished. So that's going to be once it comes back from the editor. I've done the first draft, and so then I'll have to redo that
and change everything that's changed.
So that's going to be that, plus the Gadget Show. It's going to take most of this year. I do the odd bit of scribbling as well for the Amateur Photographer and Classic Car Weekly. So cool. Between all that. That's probably most of it, actually.
Interesting. What goes into writing a book? Like, is it just you sit there and just hammer?
I've never done
pages?
It before. I think for me it would seem to be initially a bit of a shock that it actually, you've got all these 80,000 words or whatever to do in the next 8 months. So that's 10,000 words a month. It actually, then you better actually make sure you get something down.
Does it feel like homework? Does it feel like uni?
It does. Yes, I don't recall working as hard as that at college.
Okay. Interesting. What's your technique for writing then? Do you like to find a little space, like your little corner and whatever, switch off?
I love writing on the phone. It's so much more relaxing.
Really?
You actually just tap away in Google Docs on your...
So you literally will just tap away, like be on the train and you'll knock
yes.
out?
Yes. And then you can also then pick up wherever on other devices, on your iPads or laptops or wherever you are. And I love going to the local library, which is fantastic. Because I live near Birmingham, we've got a library in Worcester called the Hive, which is just brilliant. And it's open because they have this wonderful idea of combining their town library with their university library. They've got adequate budget to keep it open from 10 in the morning till 10 in the evening.
So you can go in there. If you ever see John in the library texting or tweeting, he's not texting and tweeting. He's writing his book. Leave him alone.
That's really cool. Great. It's a very nice environment.
I'd love to do that, but like... do you turn your phone landscape then when you're typing?
No,
you literally just sit there, and that's just so intriguing because I could do a bit, but I'd feel like I need a keyboard. Like I feel like it's pretty proficient.
You
can
get
the
a keyboard with the phone, I suppose. Yeah.
Wow, knocking out chapters written on a phone—that's pretty cool.
It is, and Google Docs is very good. It sort of adapts to the size of which Apple's Pages doesn't, for example.
It's
another half-hearted bit of software for the company that's supposed to be bringing you services. They need to get this sorted out.
Actually, before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the world of tech. Have you heard about the FaceTime scandal with Apple? Well, not really a scandal, but the sort of gap in their security. Where basically you could FaceTime somebody, and if you added yourself into the FaceTime call again, it would just answer on the other end.
Yes.
So if I, for example, called you, then added myself, Marcus Bronzy, to it, I'd hear you'd pick up without you doing
absolutely
anything at all.
Yes, it's a bit of a shock that nobody discovered that, wasn't it, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, I always wonder how people figure these things out. Is it just somebody sitting there going, I'm going to add myself to the conversation, and they're like, oh, hang on, it's happened, or, you know.
In that case, I suppose it is, yes, apart from, as opposed to the people who deliberately try and hack into things, which was an interesting thing looking at last year. I mean, they went to one of those pen test companies where they actually try and penetrate bits of software.
Yeah.
When we got in there, they had a Tesla in bits all over the floor.
What are they trying to do to it? Hack it?
Yes, absolutely.
Because
it was the first car that's been really updatable over the air.
I mean, you've got auto driving as well.
Sort of, yes.
Auto-ish driving, yes. Potential there for somebody to get involved in. There's going to be a film about that soon, surely, isn't there? Somebody in their car, they're trying to go to work. It's going to be like, what was that classic? Billy won't remember it. I'm trying to remember the film where they have to hijack a coach or a bus. Is it Speed?
Speed.
It's going to be like Speed, but instead you get in your car and you're on your way to work and somebody hijacks it.
That could all happen now, of course. I think, because I mean, even with the existing, every car's got a SIM card in it, hasn't it now?
Yeah.
Every new one, anyway.
Yeah.
And,
Pretty good. But thank you very much for coming on the show, John. I appreciate you killing some time with us. It was great talking about what you could tell us about the Gadget Show.
Yes, they haven't decided what they're doing yet. That's good, but it's always good, isn't it, to wait till the last minute?
I think it's what's keeping things fresh, because I think the old model of TV, you could shoot something now that would go out, and by the way, now is February, that could go out in July. Like, that could be a reasonable turnaround for TV. But with the world of gadgets and tech, things are just moving faster and faster. So, you know, the fact that sometimes things kind of come together a few days before the shoot, I think it's
or
great.
Are they? Or are they? Or are they moving faster? Or
is I it? Feel like they are. Do you not feel so?
I don't know. I'm not so sure. I just when you think of all the inventions of the 20th century, you know, the mass car industry, the jumbo jet, radio, or whatever. I mean, you just think of all those things versus what's happening. I mean, it's almost now the social aspects and of technology is more where the concern is, isn't it, than the actual hardware, in a sense. We're probably plateauing a bit with the older.
You know what? You're right. Some areas are really moving forward. Some areas are actually going backwards. Like with regards to travel, and this is excluding Hyperloop and Hyperloop One, because it's not out yet. It's not ready yet. Mm. We've actually gone backwards because there's no Concorde now, is there? And that was I know it might be coming back and stuff, but we've actually become a bit slower when it comes to kind of transatlantic travel, which is quite interesting when loads of other things have kind of shot forward. One thing that we're really found interesting is drones and aerial photography. That's kind of ridiculous.
That is amazing, isn't it? The opportunities of drones now. But you have to be good at it, I think, too. You have to be good with your drone.
And safe, sure, otherwise you will shut down airports for 48 hours, even though a drone battery life is only 20 minutes. Don't know how that works out, but okay.
I was supposed to be going on my drone course for an item, and it's not happened yet. That's something that they ought to do. I should be lobbying them about that. Thank you for reminding me.
Today, John's going to be at Heathrow Airport flying a drone. Also gimbal-based photography as well. So we actually just got our hands on the DJI Osmo Pocket, which is like a really small form factor gimbal. It's kind of like they've got a drone chopped off the gimbal and given you a little battery pack on it.
Yes.
And that is really impressive. Like, considering what you would need to get the same visual effect of kind of smooth camera transitions and pans and stuff before, that's really an impressive place. But I think you've made a really valid point that some areas of technology have kind of like really, we've seen a real increase in development and change, and other areas like travel it's kind of gone backwards a little bit, really. Interesting.
Oh, we can't end on that note. It's terrible. It's great. 2019 is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. 2019 is going to be great. Any apps that you've been kind of getting into on your phone there? Anything new that you've picked up recently? We always like to share a new app if one
a
has
new
been picked
app.
Up.
Oh, God,
or one that you just found that's pretty handy or a bit of fun.
What do I use on?
Yeah, you can have a little look. Last app they've used is. What's the last app that you've used?
I mean, the one that surprises me that I use a lot is Apple's News app. And I didn't, in some ways, their packaging. I mean, even though there's quite a lot of holes in it when you start looking in detail, it's just, I find it a lot, there's a lot of go to that. Slightly disappointed by BBC Sounds. Mainly because it doesn't work in the car yet, and also because it doesn't tell you any details about what's on now.
It's very strange. It's very interesting. I'm gonna ask you some questions, and this could be quite enlightening. So, were you a fan of the Radio iPlayer?
Yes, I still use it all the time.
Going to be discontinued.
Well, eventually, they say eventually going to make the sounds as good as. And I mean, I like the way it's integrating podcasts and you. But I'm interrupting your question. But I like the way it's combining podcasts and live radio and the radio schedule together.
Right.
That's good. I find it very limited in what it can do. But you were about to ask me something there.
I was just going to ask, what do you think it could do to make sure that you get all the best of what it's trying to bring to the table and still have all the essence of the Radio iPlayer? What do you think it needs to...
It just needs to have everything that's in the iPlayer and all the other things.
Simple.
I don't understand quite why it doesn't. I mean, presumably they haven't developed the car interface yet. They haven't. They do say they're going to. Why you don't get all the program information, I don't know. You seem to get it... And I could be wrong because I haven't looked into it the last week or two, but certainly when I looked last, it didn't tell you. It just gave you the headline of the program without any details until the program had finished, and then all the details appeared. Why was that?
Well, I'm going to say I'm a little bit in the know, so I'm going to say what I can. So basically, the metadata that you put in. So, like, say when we upload a podcast, we upload the title, the show description and stuff. When you do create new apps, you have kind of new back ends that you kind of have to put in that data into. So I think if it was an example, if they had the original Radio iPlayer app and they kind of transitioned over to a sounds looking interface, everyone could probably still keep, you know, in this show, this happens and whatever, type that in or paste it in and that would work. But I think with a totally new app, there's going to be a different back end and it's trying to integrate the old back end and the new back end and make them work so that they can have all the same information or transitioning over from one back end to another. That's what you do in theory. I'm not going to say what's happening, but
it's all about transitioning
the back end. It's all about the transition.
I have to look this up when I get home.
Yes. just basically the website that you type in all the information into that gives you all the info. It's very interesting. So yeah, I mean, cause that was a big push from the BBC for that app. And I think they wanted it to do really big things, but I think it's been a very big learning experience with regards to making sure that you keep your core audience happy whilst introducing new things. So it'd be very interesting to see how that goes. I mean, how do you feel about algorithmic tune selection and music and content selection? Are you a Spotify user?
I'm a Spotify user, yes.
You a big fan of that?
I like it, yes. Yeah. I mean, yes, I tend to end up by searching for things. I mean, rather than necessarily getting things from the algorithms, I think.
Do you kind of go for catalogue stuff? Like, oh, I fancy listening to a bit of this and search for the artist, or do you just search for genres and stuff? I always like to know, because I'm a bit of I just look for an old album and go from there, really.
I don't know. What's that? Not quite sure. Probably everything, really. I was probably quite interested. Tend to be interested in jazz. I tend to be interested in. I like classical music as well. So I often tend to be. The starting point tends to be a program. Usually, so I was like, they had the composer from La La Land on the movie Radio 3 movie program on the side, which is whatever it is about music and cinema, Sound of Cinema or something, and they had him interviewed. So I went back to the because he was using a lot of the Michel Legrand stuff, and so I searched for that in Spotify the other week, and thing. So that was radio prompted. A lot of his. The range of stuff can be quite limited once you get into some of those, even on Spotify.
Yeah. They've not quite got everything.
No, not quite. They've got a huge amount of stuff.
Loads of stuff.
Yes, it's just fantastic. Yes, and I suppose I'd probably do. I tend to be radio driven. So okay. I tend to look at what's been on programs and.
Yeah, that's quite good. Like, you listen back.
Yeah.
So when you're like listening to radio and stuff, you kind of told us about the radio that you bring with you on your walks.
Except when I'm with Mrs. Bentley, obviously I don't listen to the radio when I'm with Mrs. Bentley or the daughters.
Do you use smart speakers and stuff? Are you like an Alexa user and stuff like that?
Mrs. Bentley's banned Alexa. She thinks she's spying on us, and she might be.
Wow.
So yes.
So Mrs. Bentley,
she was an enthusiastic Alexa user, mainly as a radio initially.
So. I met a girl called Alexa the other day, and I felt sorry for her. As soon as she introduced us, I was like, "What's your name?" She's like, "Alexa." I was like, I'm going to apologise now, because once I tell my mates that your name's Alexa, you're going to be asked to do stuff all night long. They're like, Alexa, give me a drink. Alexa, open the door.
Yes, and you can't change it, can you? I don't think you can.
There might be an alternative signal for it, right? I think you can say something. I can't remember what it is, but there's like another name you can use, or you can, because they've thought about it, because there are people called Alexa out there. But I think it's great. I think cheers Amazon, you got us in Alexa's head all night long. She hated it, and you could tell as soon as she introduced herself, she was thinking, don't do it guys, and I was like, right. Alexa. So you got a smart speaker free home then?
Well, it's in there, but it's largely off. Yes.
Oh wow, yes. Okay, and what about the kids and daughters? Are they largely into tech as well, or cars?
They're certainly in. They use their phones very intensively and laptops intensively. They're not particularly. They both value laptops, strangely, in a world of tablets. They're very keen on still on that tradition. I think so. They don't do a lot of photography. They like driving, but mainly in terms of getting there, being independent. But I mean, they don't fall into the category of people who don't like cars. Are very keen often to say young people these days not interested in cars. You know, driving. But actually, I think they both really value the independence that driving about brings.
And how about the techie side of you? Do you feel like that's rubbed off on them at all? Do you feel like they're quite into tech or not so much?
No, I get asked questions to do. I have to remember to back up all their things
and remind
them about.
So your daddy cloud storage, your daddy update your firmware, your dad, this isn't working, how do I do it kind of things.
And they're 21, 23.
Never going to end. So you're going to be getting it all the time, mate. Right, I think that's a nice way to end the show. I'm happy with that instead of of good. Woe betide us. Technology is going to kill us. Now, once again, thank you for having us on the show. Where can we find you on social media? Please tell our listeners.
Oh, I'm not very prolific. I've got an Instagram thing at JohnBentley90 and Twitter and
What do you prefer to use? Do you like a little tweet or a little Instagram? Where are you at?
I quite like the discipline of Twitter, keeping yourself short.
Yeah,
I tend to ramble on too much. It's a bit of that.
Okay, yes. Cool. Yeah, we'll check out John on Twitter and Instagram, and also on the latest season of The Gadget Show, which in 2019, when are we going to be looking forward to?
Early April,
we're going to be able to see it. It's a great show. I can't wait to see what you get up to. And also, Craig learning another language. That's going to be hilarious. Craig learning another language. That's going to be very interesting. I can't wait to see a look on the person's face when he tries to speak whatever language he's learning to them. Look of confusion. But yeah, thank you very much for killing some time with us. I've been Marcus Brunsey.
And I'm John Bentley.
Plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.